You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim and Bobby Bell. You just been listening to Hot Texas and Hot Texas Swing Band?
Yes, and you may have noticed, if you were watching, our brand new logo created courtesy of Blue Cottage Agency, a new sponsor, and they're working right now on a banner that will replace the banner that you are what you see now behind us. We're very excited. They are creating all kinds of wonderful Facebook and Instagram posts for us, and you'll want to just go ahead and follow us on Rendezvous with a Writer on Facebook and on Instagram to see all about the June guests that are coming up and more.
Right. We're on all these things, right? Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
iHeartRadio.
Yeah. There's lots of ways to follow us and hear not only tonight's show, but all the way back to show number one, August 4th of 2022. So, come along and join us.
Yeah.
So, Jim, who's our guest tonight?
Special guest tonight.
Yeah, who's our guest?
Teresa H. Jennison.
There she is. Hello, Teresa.
Hello. How are you?
We're good. Yeah. We're good.
We're going to talk about her book, The Ways of Water.
Yes, and I'm going to hold it up. Dear reader, this is another book you will want to get a hold of, and you won't be able to put it down. You know, everybody's talking right now about summer reads and beach reads and whatever. This is perfect for this time of year. And Teresa, where are you joining us from?
I'm in Port Townsend, Washington. It's about 2 hours west of Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the...
We have a little bio here. So we'll read this little bio and then you'll fill us in later about one thing. Teresa, a career educator, studied history and French at Gonzaga University and earned an MA in linguistics from the University of Washington. Her essays and short fiction appeared in anthologies and literary journals. Her debut novel, The Ways of Water, was inspired by her grandmother's early life in the Southwest. It won the prestigious 2024 Western Heritage Award for Outstanding Western Novel, presented by the National Cowboy and Western Heritage Museum. She writes from Port Townsend, Washington, where she hikes, bikes, and tends a small orchard. Welcome.
Thank you.
So fun. We met you in Tombstone.
Tombstone. We were at the Tombstone Book Fest.
Yes, and it turns out Jim and I were reimagining, you know, reviewing that event and where people were seated, and you were real near to Ashley Sweeney, I think.
Yes.
And Bob Yoho and Joe Brown were kind of a table down from you. Bob was on, I guess, last month. Joe, we've known forever, and he's been on a couple times. Right across from you was our good friend Henry Park, who is often with us the first Thursday of the month, and he sends his regrets. This was one Thursday that he couldn't make it. Nancy Elliott, who was on with us early May, she was like on the opposite side. You were surrounded by really talented people.
It was a very fun event, and it was a delight to meet you there.
Yeah. Yeah, we enjoyed, we made some other wonderful contacts. We really, Doug Hawking put that together, and it was a wonderful variety of writers. It was really great. Is there something you'd like to tell us about yourself that Jim didn't cover in the bio?
Well, I taught high school English and French and history for quite a few years. And some of my work also took me to other countries. So I've lived on four continents and hope to bring more of that into my writing in the future.
Good. Well, when did you first start writing? I suppose you maybe started about the time you were 6 years old or something.
As a little girl, I wanted to be a writer. Life got busy, and I ended up going into teaching and raising a family. And naturally, I put it aside for a bit, but I will tell you that I had a little table in the corner of the garage, and I would go in there when the kids were in school, and this is really where I started this novel. And then later on, of course, now my kids are out of the house, I am free to write as much as I want.
Do you currently have a favorite place to write, or are you still working out of that corner?
I got out of the garage. I love being in my comfy chair, actually in the living room. I have a view out to a field with fir trees and wild rose. And it's a very meditative view. And I think I write best from that place.
Do you write longhand, or are you working on a laptop or a tablet, or how do you capture your thoughts?
I often start longhand, just with ideas. And I like to, when I go, let's say, camping or into nature, I always take a pad and paper, and I do write notes then. But then pretty soon I get it into the computer. Mm-hmm. And probably most of my revising and editing is all done on the laptop.
Mm-hmm. We have a couple author friends. I don't know if you know Chris Mullen. It seems like he really likes to go to a coffee shop and have all kinds of activity around him. I can't imagine that unless you just need to be around to hear, dialogue and how people are talking to each other and get some ideas. But I can't imagine being creative there. What about you? Do you need a lot of silence or commotion?
I like quiet. Yes. I'll get up in the morning, have my coffee and get writing. Then I'll take a break. And I often go back to it at night. And I often edit at night or get new ideas. It's different energy morning and night. And I kind of combine the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the Western Heritage Award that you won, you had a little backstory on how you found out about that.
Yeah. How were you notified and what did you feel?
I will tell you, I was so surprised. I applied because another author I knew had won and I so admired her work. And I was in the Missoula airport. I had just been visiting my daughter. And I was waiting for my flight. I was about 10 minutes before I needed to get on my flight. And I got the phone call. And I just couldn't believe it. I was so, so excited. And of course, the first thing they said is, can you be here in Oklahoma City? And I said, absolutely. I'm there. And it was just a wonderful event. Just Reba McEntire was honored at Lifetime Achievement Award. Mo Bringsplenty was honored. Just so many talented filmmakers, musicians, and writers. It was just a delight.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like it's always quite elegant. I see pictures on the museum's website, kind of the before. And I know it streams live. I know last year or the year before, I actually watched a lot of it. It has to feel, like the Academy Awards or something. It's sort of more than just the prestige of the award. The whole way that it's handled seems very special.
And it's in that National Cowboy Museum, which is just phenomenal. Just really overwhelming. So many different stories of the West. And I guess that's one reason why I was so honored. Is this is one more story of a nuanced history, of a history of so many stories, and I was grateful that they really wanted to honor a woman's story and a family story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You've won some other awards. Is there anything new that's not listed maybe yet on your website that you want?
Well, I just got the silver medal for the IPPI award for the regional, and it was the West Mountain region. And I'm really honored.
Congratulations. Congratulations. It must be really something to have your work.
Yeah.
It's one thing, you know,
recognized.
Right. Yeah. And have, you know, have readers that are loving what you're writing, but then to have your peers also recognize that, you know, what your talents are. That just has to be so special.
Thank you.
Well, we read the book, so we think it's a great book. So we understand how you got the awards.
Yes, yes, yes. Like always, absolutely, we read the book. It's one of the most fun things for us is that every week we're picking up a new book and reading it and then talking about it. And, oh, don't tell me, I haven't gotten to that yet. Or, oh, that already happened. Or, oh, yeah, I got by that already. What'd you think of that?
Well, that's the most delightful thing is talking with readers. And so often their questions are surprising and really makes you think about your process and your motivations and the story. And it's been really a delight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The book was published during 2023. And although already COVID feels like something sort of in the past, when I think about years, were you writing it at all during COVID, or did it inform the story at all? What was going on for you during that time?
So I wrote it before COVID. I had written it, the essential story, many years before, and I had set it aside. I had done quite a bit of creative nonfiction writing in the meantime. But it was COVID that prompted me to get back to it. I think like many people during this time, it was confusing. I began thinking, you know, am I going to survive? What do I wish I'd done? What do I still want to do? And publishing this book was one of them. So I pulled it out of my bottom drawer, had lots of time at home, edited it pretty deeply, and sent it off to the publisher.
So we're talking, I forget, I'm just so intrigued in with what you're saying, I forget we're on the air. We are talking with the author, award-winning author, Teresa H. Johnson, about her book, The Ways of Water, a novel. And do you want to tell us kind of briefly, kind of place the story, when and where does it take place?
It takes place in the early 1900s in the Southwest, in New Mexico, Arizona, and then it ends in California, Texas also, and also Chihuahua. So it is the story of Josie Bell Gore, the daughter of a steam locomotive engineer and a Texas seamstress. And they are an itinerant family. So it's a story of their odyssey, in a sense. There is a point where there is a family tragedy, and Josie is soon on her own, trying to make her way in a man's world.
Mm-hmm.
And she, through many adventures, she finds herself and makes a life.
Mm-hmm.
What's the inspiration for Josie?
As you mentioned in the introduction, I is inspired by the life of my grandmother. I kept her name, although I'm very clear this is historical fiction, inspired by her story. Her name was Josie Bell. I knew her and loved her. And while she was still living, when I was in about my 20s particularly, I would visit her often and interview her and took many notes and kept asking her again, tell me about your childhood. And I was just amazed of what she had lived through. Those first two decades of the 20th century are really fascinating times. A lot happened. The cultural and social shifts and technology. And I kept asking her again, and I would get different stories. Sometimes I would get a different version of a story. But I took notes, never intending to write a novel. I intended just to write a short biography. And it was after doing research about the time that I thought this is a much bigger story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So how do you take the, you know, her story, and how do you craft the historical fiction part and sort of tell the family story and set it within this framework? Does that question make sense?
Yes, it does. You know, I, as a historian, I think individual stories are fascinating, but you can't separate them from the background, from the time and the historical and social events happening. And so I tried to weave them in, and it helped me understand why certain things happened, why they had to make the choices they did, why they might have had to move at different times. This time, the Southwest was boom and bust. There would be railroads coming in, and then there would be mining, but then the mining would close. And the mines would shut, and there were so many different events. And of course, the war affected everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I felt that doing the research gave me more a better understanding of the people who were living then. And I wanted to tell the story of my family, but also all the people that tried to make it on too few acres in the arid West. The majority couldn't make it in ranching mm-hmm. or farming. And many had to move on. And one reason why that culture was so itinerant.
Go ahead.
It was like those were tough times. You know, most of those folks were pretty poor. And that would have been very pleasant, you know, having those ranches and those farms then. And then they were kind of always on the move because of her dad's job.
Yeah, her dad.
He's a railroad guy, and he lost the job because of his problems, or the mines quit, or, you know, something else happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting story. And then we even get clear down to Mexico, don't we?
Yes. So at one point, the job that her father got mm-hmm. was driving the train in Chihuahua, New Mexico, or Chihuahua, Mexico. And they were there right when the Mexican Revolution was starting to heat up. Pancho Villa was riding through Chihuahua, and they were starting to attack the trains. They wanted the arms that the trains were carrying north and south to the military. And so it became unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And needless to say, they moved on.
Mm-hmm. The story opens with a very gripping scene. You couldn't be a reader and not be absolutely captivated and engaged. So it's not really a spoiler alert because it's right there at the very beginning of the book. Do you want to just set how the book opens for us?
So the book begins in what's called the Jornada del Muerto, and it's the part of southern New Mexico, just north of Las Cruces. It's an arid valley between two mountain ranges, and the family was living there. They were living in a tank top. The trains had to tank up every 8 to 10 miles. There were lots of these little tiny towns. And something had gotten into the well. It was an animal. Some family members say it was a rabbit. Others, I'm not sure. Josie was sent down to the well. She was the only one who was small enough but capable enough to grab that varmint and bring it out. And I will tell you, much of the story is fiction, but that story was a tale that my grandmother mm-hmm. told me many, many times. I think if you experience this as a 6-year-old, it's something you would never forget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it also is had to happen because water was so scarce and so valuable.
Mm-hmm. And it's the first sort of introduction to the ways of water in the book.
Yeah, could you talk about the title a little bit? How fits it into the story, the ways of water? And on the cover here, well, who's that on the cover?
It's a great cover.
That's my great aunt. She's in the story. That's Ida May. And actually, happened at the end of the book. She ended up driving from San Francisco all the way to eastern New Mexico in a Model T in about 1921. So I just love the photo, and fortunately my publisher was able to colorize it and produce it for the cover. I've been pleased with it.
Yeah, it's really an engaging cover.
Yeah. I like the cover. Yeah, I like the picture.
Thank you. Jim, you asked about the title. Water is a metaphor throughout the book.
Right.
The dearth of water in the desert to the insatiable thirst of the steam locomotives, which meant they had to live in these out-of-the-way places. During that time, the Rio Grande is dammed for the first time, and it discusses and we see the effects that damming a river can bring, positive and negative. Water as a blessing, water as healing. And of course, in the end, it's not a surprise, Josie ends up next to the Pacific in San Francisco Bay.
Does.
So water runs throughout.
When we come back, we're going to take a very short break. We'll be talking in greater detail more about this wonderful book, The Ways of Water, with our special guest, Teresa H. Jansen. But first, here is one of the places that you can find tonight's book, along with all of the books of our authors here on Rendezvous with a Writer. So we're going to have a little word from our Out West Shop Bookshop affiliate page. And when we come back, she's going to treat us to a live reading. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We have special guest tonight, Teresa Jansen, and we're talking about her book, The Ways of Water. And she's going to read a little bit from the book.
Yes.
Okay. This very short excerpt is from the first chapter, and Josie is in the Jornada del Muerto, in the desert home, which I just described. She's probably about 5 or 6. In our old Sunday school book, my favorite picture was of Noah ushering the last animals, a pair of elephants with long tusks, aboard a tub of an ark surrounded by rising water. I wondered how water, like gold to us, could be so frightful. Mama said too much of anything could lead to ruin, but that was hard to imagine in a land where everything but sun, sand, and wind seems scarce. Mama read us the story of Exodus from her Bible. I was haunted by the tale of the Egyptians who'd ridden their horses into the dry seabed to be drowned by the waters of the Red Sea. One summer afternoon, as the land baked in a great blue oven, I watched the hens gobble their bits of corn and looked up to see two cowhands riding off over the heated sands of the Jornada toward a distant shimmering sea. I feared for their lives should the rippling waters overcome them.
You need to have a little drink of water.
Speaking of water.
I found Mama in the kitchen and told her of their peril. She laughed and said not to worry. Then she caught her breath and gave me a strange look, put down her rolling pin, bent down to the level of my face, and put her floured hands on my shoulders. You must never walk toward that water, child, no matter how thirsty you are. It's a mirage, a vision of water made by heat waves over the sand. She walked me to the porch, and we followed the progress of the men on horseback as they headed south, trailed by a tawny plume of dust. "Those cowboys won't drown in the desert," Mama said. "Water here is scarcer than a hen's tooth." She withdrew her hand and went back to her pie crust. I sat on the gray boards of the porch and mouthed the new word for distant water, mirage, as I listened to the soft cluck of hens in their dust baths, contented after having chewed up the last of the corn. I sobbed quietly as the cowboys disappeared beneath the quivering sea.
Very good.
Teresa Jensen, our special guest tonight, has just given us a wonderful reading. And I hope that you heard the lyrical prose, the rich imagery. Reading you, Teresa, is such a pleasure because every sentence is so full. We're just right there. We can feel and touch and hear exactly what's going on with the characters in such a marvelous way. And you also use water a lot in ways that not somewhat unexpected, because you'll use water as a metaphor, you know, in a sentence. You'll say something that was as smooth as water, or this, you know, it took a different course, like water, it took us on a different course. And you use, and trains too, which is very, it's so deftly woven that you might miss it, except when you read it, it just makes, it's like special, you know, it's like, it's just wonderful how you construct the story through your prose.
Thank you. I traveled to every locale that the story took place in. One of the catalysts for me to begin writing it was when I went to this Jornada del Muerto and looking for the graves of my great-grandparents. And the desert had taken over the graveyard. It was now not even a ghost town, a few boards, a town of what was once 3,000 people. And I realized at that moment that it was more than just a story of my family. It was the story of all the people who traveled west in search of a dream.
Yeah.
The majority mm-hmm. were not successful in that mm-hmm. part of eventually right. the big cattle conglomerates took over. And I just realized I not only want to tell my family's story, but the story of so many. Mm-hmm. And I guess at that point, too, I realized that it may need to be told as historical fiction to include the bigger story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Let's talk a little bit more about this family, the immediate family. We know it, Josie, we're seeing this story first person kind of through Josie's eyes. And she is a young gal. She receives a harmonica and it travels with her through her life. Tell us a little bit about Josie. And again, these are short sentences, so we just engage our listeners to want to go read the book.
She begins when she's quite young and ends when she's about 21. So it's a coming of age story. And the harmonica mm-hmm. was important. To me, it was important. Not only did she actually have a harmonica and play for children, but her life was so, broken up, living in so many different places, so much inconsistency, that I needed some consistent objects which she could take with her that could carry her through. And I think that's very common for those mm-hmm. who have to move often, mm-hmm. To have a few things that can center you.
Mm-hmm.
And that harmonica was very mm-hmm. important to her.
And we see that yeah. with her mom.
Yeah.
Because her mom has a few things that travel with her.
The jade plant.
That follows the family. I think I wrote one time that it's much better to have a plant in a pot than try to plant things into the ground that you will be leaving before long. So this this pot was as mobile as the family.
Mm-hmm. And it travels. It's amazing how that plant really, you know, with every move, I think we see the plant, the rocking chair included, and eventually a Singer sewing machine comes along. What else would you like to share about Mama? She's a wonderful, wonderful character. Josie's mom.
I mentioned quite a bit her work as a seamstress, and it was a way to get extra money. The sewing machine was very important in her life as a way to help take care of her children, to make their clothes. But also during the book, she talks about sewing as being all about hope, that you can bring rags and small bits of fabric and disparate pieces and sew them together to make something that's strong and lasting. And I like to think of Mama that way too.
Mm-hmm.
She was creating the family.
If you don't mind, I have a quote I'd love to read about Mama that so struck me. Mama was a softener, like the powder you add to the wash, a lace trim stitched over a severe dress, a linen cloth spread on rough table, a melody hummed during a tedious wait, a touch, a tender look. She had her ways of rounding off the edges, of filling in the emptiness. She read her Bible and trusted in the good of the world. She's just a wonderful woman. She's a great character. I enjoyed all of the scenes with her. What about Dad?
We have talked about him. Yeah, he's the one that causes all the upheaval in the family.
Tell us about Harry.
Well, he's the father. He is a locomotive engineer, and just like a long haul trucker now, he had to be gone most of the time. It's difficult. You're not as connected to your family, yet he felt a great responsibility. I tried to present his weaknesses in an honest way, but also his strengths. And when I did the research and realized how overwhelming circumstances were, I was more compassionate and tried to depict him as a whole person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who do you want to ask about?
I just knew a couple of fellows that worked for the railroad in years gone by, and I never got the feeling that was really, maybe it could be a good job, but maybe it could be a kind of depressing job at the same time. So I could identify with that guy a little bit because I knew a guy that worked for the railroad and was an alcoholic. So
life was hard. It was not an easy job. And there are lots of dangers on the rail. There were cattle on the rail, and they were tending those steam locomotives. The steam engines themselves, they exploded, and it was a very risky job.
Mm-hmm. I know when you compare it a little to trucking, I'd say there are many similarities. It's very, trucking is also for families that are involved in a parent being gone, the truck accidents and the things that happen. It has to be a similar kind of feeling, stress for the family. She has some sisters. She has Irene and Ida May. You want to talk a little bit about those two ladies?
Irene was her older, both of them were older sisters. Irene ended up marrying into the cattle ranching family there in the Jornada, and she kind of becomes the rock later in the story. It was actually really delightful. I was on a recent book tour, and I was able to go to the cattle ranches, that the one that Irene lived on, and also one that her in-laws had. And it was just a delight being there and seeing those same places that I learned about in interviewing my grandmother, to see their still functioning cattle ranches. And the community was embraced the story a lot. Mm-hmm. Not too much has been written about that part of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it was really a delight to see it still going.
Mm-hmm.
Ida Mae was her other sister, the city city sister who went off and made a life and was a support to her.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other favorite characters you created there that you wanted to mention?
Favorite characters. I loved her brother, Charlie.
Charlie.
Her you know, bosom buddy. Also, one of the characters that I really enjoyed was Ma Brown.
Yes.
And he was the helper. And it came into her life at a really important time. And I think everyone needs a helper like that in their life, several. And my grandmother always spoke of her highly.
Yes, Ma Brown is, she becomes kind of a touchstone in this Tori story too, because she's involved in so many human causes or needs. She's feeding every day at 4 o'clock. She's with another woman, they're feeding Mexican refugees that are coming in at that time into the area. And she's with the Red Cross and she's a suffragette. And she's like a whirlwind everywhere. Great role model, another strong woman in the story, but also somebody that Josie gets to experience. And I think is another, as she's coming of age, you know, and we learn later on, Ma Brown really has an impact on her life in a way that we'll have to read to find out. Let's talk about. So we go. The book is kind of organized in time frames. Did you write it in time frames, or did you create scenes and then say, oh, this is going to need to go in that chapter, and this is, or did you just write it in chronological order? How did that come about?
I did write it in chronological order. I wasn't always sure where I would split different scenes, and that happened later. But because she did move from place to place, that seemed to be the most logical way to organize it. And also for my reader, because there were so many settings.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, there were other places she went and I just couldn't fit it all in. Her life was more chaotic than even I depict in the story. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
You want to talk about Visby?
Yeah, do we want to talk about how we get on the show first, or did you?
No, let's talk about Visby.
Let's talk about Visby first. Visby, an interesting place. Copper, everything was copper there.
Copper Queen.
Josie and her family lived in Visby during the height of some of the copper mining during World War I. And it was a company town. So they had to get used to what that meant, being in debt from the beginning. And some of the family was still there when they had the Visby deportation, which was when some miners struck and they kicked them out of town. I love doing that research, and always when I do research, I find some commonalities, something to take to think about for present times. It's a side thing, but the other thing that I researched quite a bit before publishing was the pandemic, the flu pandemic, mm-hmm. And this happened, right at the end of World War I. And I did all the research before our pandemic. And when I was doing my research, I never dreamed that I would be living through the same thing
exactly.
that my sisters did. And that mm-hmm. was a surprise.
Yeah.
And also mm-hmm. maybe gave me just a little more perspective on the pandemic when it did hit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in the section on the pandemic, when you do talk about everybody was got those sewing machines going and making masks. And it's interesting because it's only been for us a couple of years, but I remember when I read that, I remembered how many friends were making masks, you know, before masks were really finally sort of available, and they were paying their bills because they were making masks and everyone got out that sewing machine and, you know, got out whatever fabric they had and using cloth napkins or, you know, whatever they could get a hold of. And I thought, oh, how interesting that this is, you know, back to the future. Yeah.
I like the little story about the cigar cellar.
Yes, back in Bisbee. Yes.
Well, that was some fun research. I called plenty of cigar shops in doing my research, learned a lot about cigars. And you know, that was a lot of the joys of writing the book, was learning about these things myself and seeing parallels. So, you know, even post-World War I, there was a lot of social unrest. There were a lot of cultural shifts for women and so many strides made by women. And I really enjoyed learning about that again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about cigars. Josie is selling them inside the hotel, the Copper Queen Hotel. And Jim, you sold cigars when you were a young man.
Yeah, when I was a teenager.
Which I didn't know.
I sold cigars too. And it's amazing. You get a little lesson on selling them. I know the first time the fellow asked for a cigar, you know, and I pulled one out of the box and handed it to him. He looks at me and he says, is that fresh?
And then
fresh. And then my father gave me this great education on selling cigars. Said, don't ever hand him a cigar. Pick the box up and let him pick the cigar out of the box.
Okay. Well, lots of lessons to be learned. Yes, it was really fun thinking about the culture, the changes. Of course, at the time, they didn't know the dangers of smoking. It was actually considered a good thing to be doing, you know, relaxing.
Right.
But I think also Josie learned a lot from selling something that people craved. And she learned a lot about human nature.
Mm-hmm. You actually spent some time on a plantation, didn't you? Didn't you tell us that she's
kind of actually went to a cigar making cigar plantation and a cigar making operation. Yeah. So, yes, I learned quite a bit about it.
Great.
We're going to take just a moment. Do you remember? I know we talked about meeting in Tombstone. We love to take just a moment and let our viewers and listeners know that if they're interested in being on the show, there's a way to kind of open a line of communication with us. Teresa, what was your experience with us?
Oh, this has been great. I was so excited about the opportunity when I met you in Tombstone. And it's just been such a pleasure. Lots of good conversation, good stories shared.
Yeah.
I really thank you.
And I think we met and then we were hardly back from the Tombstone weekend because we went on to the Tucson Festival that same weekend. And there was an email from you because I had said, you know, let's exchange. And there was an email and I really want to be on the show. And what do I do? And, you know, we got started talking. So that's the way. If you're interested in being on the show, go ahead and reach out to me at Bobby with an I, BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com. And we'll just begin a little bit of a dialogue. And we also want to take a moment to thank kind of a new sponsor coming along with us, Blue Cottage Agency.
Right.
We mentioned them at the top of the show because they've created a new logo for us. And we're just thrilled to be kind of working alongside with the Blue Cottage, representing and promoting books, writers, and the literary arts as a whole. And Clicks by Madison, creative design, graphics, and logos. And if we really thank them for everything that they do for us, and as well as the authors and such that are part of Blue Cottage, it's just wonderful to see what Blue Cottage does to support those authors. And if you're interested in being a sponsor, the same thing, just contact me at BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com. And we'd be happy to talk to you about that. Sponsors help us stay on the air and we certainly don't want to go away. So you can help.
Speaking of characters, we've been talking about, do any of them ever surprise you?
Ma Brown. She was supposed to be a much smaller part, and she just took on her own personality and just got more and more colorful and it was a joy to.
That's great.
To follow her lead.
She was a fun character. It was nice reading about her.
She has such high energy. And there's a lot of dialogue in the book. Do you have any tips on writing dialogue you might like to share?
I listen to dialogue no matter where I am, on a bus, in a coffee shop, and I write things down. I think that gives you some of the good ideas for simple, short, but these kind of zinger lines.
And I know that you belong to a number of writing groups. What are a benefit or two that you've had from belonging to a group?
Oh, just great support. Having an ear, being able to ask questions of fellow writers, sharing experiences. It's such a support. You know, writers are working alone. Much of the time, but to be able to share the experience has been wonderful.
I know you have a question or two.
Well, we got, what are we working on next?
Memoir. I mentioned that I had spent some time overseas, so this will be a memoir that takes place in the country of Ecuador. And I spent some time with my family, and some extraordinary things occurred, and I think it's going to make a good book.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Where can people find you, follow you? Do you have any book events coming up where they could see you?
My website is teresahjanson.com. I'm also there on Facebook/Teresa H. Jansen, and also Instagram, Teresa H. Jansen.
Yeah.
Book events. I'm going to be doing a book signing at our local Barnes & Noble in 2 days. And I'm going to be presenting actually a workshop at the Willamette Writers Conference in Portland later in the summer.
That's terrific. And I think you may have another podcast coming up. Are you going to be on that wonderful Writers 50?
Writers Over 50, yes.
Writers Over 50. That's a great show.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great show. Let's see. Jim, you have a couple quotes to read.
We do have a couple quotes.
I'm just looking at time. I don't know where it went, Teresa. It just flowed like water.
Yeah, this is from the book. Ways of Water, and Mama, she's speaking with Josie. Josie's getting some advice from her mom. And she says, "Sewing is about hope," Mama explained. "A seamstress believes that with skill and patience, the scraps of life can be stitched together to make something lasting, a thing of beauty and worth. Hope is just a little four-letter word, Josie, but it is the most important weapon you have. When God gave you your life, he gave you hope. Without that, you wouldn't have taken that first breath. Pray for the courage you need to keep hope alive." Mm-hmm. We thought that was a nice passage. And now we get a couple from the outside world. And this first one is from the great... Well, you know, we talk a lot about trains. Trains are important in this. And these next two quotes really are about trains. And this is from that baseball player, Yogi Berra, who said, "I knew I was going to take the wrong train, so I left early." And then from the great mystery writer, Agatha Christie, "Trains are wonderful. To travel by train is to see nature and human beings, towns and churches and rivers. In fact, to see life."
Oh, wonderful. Well, I love trains too. And I hope you get enough train yes. stuff in the book. It's
yes. Yes. And we took a 24-hour train ride to the Chicago area last December to be with my mom when she celebrated her 100th birthday. And sometimes the trains just the less stress, it's easy to do and navigate. And, you know, thank goodness they're still running today. We want to thank everybody that has joined us tonight. Thank you so much, Teresa, for being with us.
Thank you.
Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio. Thank you to Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. Next week, our guest, also we met in Tombstone, Kimberly Burns. We'll be talking about two books, her latest, most recent book, The Redemption of Maddie Silks, and an earlier book, The Mrs. Tabor. So we'll be talking Denver, and I'm already into Maddie Silks, and another just a wonderful read. She'll be with us next week. And Jim, do you have a final thought?
Yes. From us, from Jim and Bobby, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing, and we'll keep reading. We'll see you next week down the trail. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. It was really fun.
Have a good day.